Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia. Apriremo quelle gabbie vili e co-criminali. Animal liberation. Animal liberation. Animal liberation. Whoa.
Welcome to Freedom of Species, the radio show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves. That was Sally with Out of the Pan. Thanks, Sal. We've just got her packing up and being a bit of a roadie help in the background at the moment. But that was a great show. Thank you.
And the last song that Sal played was Dark Corner of the Night by David Tapp.
Yeah, great song.
Yeah. So today we're going to be discussing a documentary film, a new film called The Dying Trade. But before we do that, just say hello. This is Caroline. And today we have Trev and Nick in the studio.
Hello.
And before we get started, I do have to make a in-person apology for it was about a month ago. it's like the first time live on air since then. Mm-hmm. But during the trivia show, I mistakenly had the wrong answer in my head. I mixed up some of the questions, and the sound effect or the sound noise from an animal was actually a quail, not a bandicoot. So no one guessed correctly of quail, so it didn't affect the outcome, but I did lead people astray when I said that it wasn't a bird about halfway through. So just wanted to apologize. I'll try and do better for the next quiz, and we'll move on.
You're very honourable. That's great.
Do we have an update on roughly where we're at for our target for Radiothon, just while we're on
that? No is a short answer. No. Don't have an update, but I think we are very, very close to the 2026 target, which is $1,700 for FOS. Last year we did a bit over $1,900, so it'd be amazing if we could get there. Yeah. You can still donate until the end of July via GiveNow.
Yeah.
Or if you want to contact 3CR, you could contact them during business hours, or you can donate online and select FOS as your show that you would like to fund.
That's it. You've got 2 weeks to try and get us over the line.
Yes.
Beat our last year's record.
And if you are the next donator, you may actually be the very person who gets us over the line.
That's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, which would be amazing. Yeah. We appreciate everyone's support. All right. So the film that we're going to talk about today is called The Dying Trade. It's the debut documentary film by an animal rights activist and YouTuber called Jack Hancock Fares. And it explores the meat industry through a really personal lens, looking at his relationship with his father, who's a slaughterhouse worker. So we're going to have a chat about that. I think first off, I do want to give a content warning that clearly we are going to be discussing slaughterhouse work, which involves, you know, killing of animals, violence. There's also discussion in the film of psychological trauma, drug and alcohol abuse, and death. Sorry.
Yeah.
Pretty heavy topics, obviously. So just want to mention that at the start.
And if you're interested in watching the documentary, it's not a lot of graphic footage. No. There is some parts. It's only normally, you know, less than a minute at a time. Mm. Normally it's even less than 20 seconds worth at a time. Mm. And it's mostly, I would say, farmed animal conditions rather than the killing of the animals that gets shown. But in that farmed animal conditions, you do see some dead animals that are I guess the industry would consider an accident or a byproduct of that. Then the animals weren't supposed to be dead. They're still supposed to be alive, but there are still some dead animals there because of the horrible conditions. So it's there's a few times you might want to look away. I wouldn't say that you'd need to avoid watching the documentary just because of the graphic footage. I don't think it's that intense. But those little
depends
sections,
on the person, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, it definitely isn't cruelty heavy. It's definitely much more conversational and personal than Earthlings or Dominion or something like that.
But those little bits that do come in look like they could come from Dominion in a way. Mm-hmm. Like some of the farm condition type ones, like looking inside a broiler chicken shed or looking inside a, you know, farrowing crate for pigs and things like that. Like you see those sort of confronting images, so just to beware. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there are graphic descriptions of the process of killing animals, which I found very, very heavy and difficult to hear. But anyway. So look, if anyone is interested in sharing their views about the film, you are very welcome to text in to 3CR just while we're on the show until 2. And the number is 0488-809-855.
Yeah, it's free to watch on YouTube.
It is. It is, which
is cool. People might have already seen it because, Nick, you saw it last year, didn't you?
Yeah, so it was the premiere film for the Animal Liberation Film Festival, which is happening again this year in a few months. It's in the Minova. I think it's alff.org.au. But, it was a premiere film. So it was a full house watching it, which was really good. At the Nova, one of the big cinemas. Seemed to be pretty well received, and we definitely went to the Green Man's Arm after the thing, and there was lots of good discussions about it as well. So
that's great.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah, maybe you could tell us a bit about some of those discussions when it's relevant to what we're talking about today as well.
Absolutely,
what other people said.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I only watched it for the first time yesterday, so hopefully it's still fresh in my mind. But it was. I overall I liked it. I thought, and I especially thought it'd be good for someone to watch if they weren't vegan and they're just looking to learn more about, I guess, different sides of advocacy. I thought it was a good introduction, I guess, to see maybe to break down some of the stereotypes of why vegans are active and being activists and what they're trying to do and what they're trying to achieve. I feel like if someone watched this documentary, it might help them understand a bit where activists are coming from and maybe a bit of an easy sort of, you know, getting the door ajar of that sort of conversation of the different mindsets of people that are not vegan versus who are vegan and what they have in common, what they don't, or just what puts them in those situations or life experiences to get to that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that sort of the personal angle, but then bringing out to bigger issues. So, it definitely like that, like the personal relationship between the vegan activist and his dad, but then bringing out to bigger issues, like, you know, they get into, and we'll perhaps get into some of these discussions throughout the show, but like big issues like, you know, who is to blame for the harm to animals? Is it individuals consuming? Is it the slaughterhouse workers? Is it the companies? And those kind of really big issues, but it's kind of all grounded in this personal story. And it's a bit of a, like, this is a bit of a tangent, but it does actually remind me of some of my favorite punk rock albums. Propagandhi's Less Talk, More Rock. A lesser known one is The Broadway's Broken Star, but they like have that sort of focus on personal experience, but then bring that out to bigger issues about police brutality or the state or whatever it is, but it kind of starts with that personal experience. I think that's a really sort of engaging way, and as Trev said, mentioned, maybe like an accessible entry point to these big philosophical issues of kind of being grounded in the personal story.
I agree with that too. Just in terms of the way it's been received, the film's been received, I did see a number of reviews and an article in the Plant-Based News saying that the documentary has earned high praise and award nominations for its balanced take on a highly polarising topic. Mm. Instead of relying on typical preachy activist tropes, the film centres on understanding and bridging the gap between individuals holding completely different ethical views. I found that probably was a good sort of summary.
And yeah, I guess for anyone who doesn't know anything about the documentary, again, it's called The Dying Trade. It's basically a filmmaker who is vegan and his dad is a slaughterhouse worker, and he decides to basically interview his dad or start a discussion with his dad about what has maybe been an elephant in the room for a while in their relationship, in that he sort of talks a bit about how his dad hasn't been against what he's been doing with activism or with his animal advocacy. He's actually been supportive in some ways, but they've never really spoken about the obvious, I guess, clash of, you know, his job versus, or his dad's job versus his son's activism and advocacy, and how they don't really align. And that's the premise of the film. And in that, there's, it's not just a documentary showing an interview between two people, which is what I thought going in, that it would be heavily just an interview of him and his dad. But it splices in a lot of different perspectives from other people involved in advocacy, other people involved in the industry. A broad range of other people are sort of interviewed as well and spliced in. And I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I did read that Jack had actually said in an interview with Plant-Based News that, I guess initially, that making the film was an attempt to understand his father, you know, and sees it as really probably the most meaningful project that he's undertaken. He, you know, creates a lot of content for YouTube, but also the most emotionally complex, and that it did put a strain on their relationship.
Yeah.
But it also enabled him to, I guess, understand the world that his father's been working in with a bit more empathy, and that he really wanted to look at the psychological strategies that are being used to manage moral discomfort, especially when it comes to animals. He wanted to humanize slaughterhouse workers and not vilify them.
Yeah.
And he was hoping that it would challenge audiences to reflect on the systems that we're part of and to imagine a more compassionate relationship with other animals. Yeah. So do we want to get into sort of, I guess, discussing some of the people that we interviewed, and maybe also bringing out, I think there's a few different, I guess, lenses that are being used in the film. You know, there is quite a heavy, I feel, use of welfarism that I'm not particularly on board with, but I do understand, you know, where that sort of has come from. And, you know, even Jack's father, who I don't think we ever really know what his name is. Yeah.
Not sure. it probably was mentioned.
When he's actually asked initially by Jack in the beginning, you know, do you think that there's a welfare problem in the meat industry? He sort of struggles to answer that, and I think doesn't really think there is, but also acknowledges if you don't agree with the industry anyway, that you would say that there is. But he mentions Temple Grandin as doing, you know, incredible work. And
so I'd never heard of this person before.
So I had, but I didn't know a lot about what they did. And I didn't actually realize that they were a consultant for the slaughterhouse industry.
Yeah, so do you want to repeat their name just for people that might...
Temple Grandin,
who's an autistic woman and also kind of uses her... Like, there's I haven't seen it, but I think Claire Danes played her in a movie a while back. Quite an interesting interview with Stephen Colbert and Claire Danes, where Stephen Colbert kind of points out some of the hypocrisy of, like, does she really care about the animals if she's sending them to slaughter kind of thing? And, like, and she's like, yeah, kind of. And, yeah, so it's this weird thing where it's, like, apparently, like... Well, not apparently, but, like because of her autism, she kind of connects with the animals, and she basically makes, I guess, in her eyes, like, more humane slaughterhouses. She's said things like, I've got a radical dislike for radicals, that kind of thing. So she's very anti-animal rights.
Yeah.
And it's all about animal welfare. So yeah, according from a welfare perspective, she's like made improvements which make their final few seconds slightly less horrible.
Yeah.
But from an animal rights standpoint, she, as you say, she works for the animal industry. She's very invested in the animal industries. Yes. And yeah, that's sort of where she's coming from. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so when Temple says to Jack that, you know, there have been a lot of improvements in the industry over the last 10 to 20 years, but then he wants to question her specifically about what is the life like of a broiler chicken in the industry, she doesn't want to answer that.
Yeah.
And so she says she sees that as a conflict. So yeah, very much, you know, part of that industry. And I thought that was an interesting aspect to bring in, but yeah.
I appreciated, so what's her first name again?
Temple.
I really appreciated Temple's like honesty. Like, I don't necessarily, you know, obviously hold the same views as her, but as you said in the interviews, like, she wasn't sugarcoating things that happened. She wasn't trying to weasel out and make excuses of why it's okay. She was up front saying, yep, this is slightly better, and or this is still terrible. We should, you know, like, she met about farrowing crates and things like that. She's like, yeah, that's horrible. We need to move. You know, there was no mincing of words or trying to sugarcoat anything. And I thought that was, it was refreshing to hear someone who's actually in the industry, in the meat industry or in the animal farming industry, talk with that sort of honesty. Because so often the people that are saying those things as a mouthpiece of the organizations or those companies are trying to water it down as much as possible and make it as palatable. And
yeah.
And I know that that is her job, is to make things better.
Yeah.
But it was just interesting to get that brutal honesty.
And I think she is in the industry to an extent, but I think she's not like, she doesn't own the company. Like, I think she's like a consultant.
She's a consultant.
So she's not as close as a CEO of a meat company or something like that, which maybe speaks to that honesty, I guess. Yeah,
she seems
to
be positioning herself as, it's the typical example of someone trying to create change from within. So she, rather than trying to create change from outside, which I think most animal advocates do, she is taking the approach of working with the industry to try and do different incremental change to make it better and make it nicer. So this isn't me excusing it or saying it's a good approach, but I think that's clearly her approach. She's trying to really carve out a niche as being an expert or even the most progressive person in that field to push the industry into what, you know, people who only look at welfare would think are better outcomes.
Yeah, I think she's a bit different though, like from animal advocates who are like, I'm vegan and I don't want animals to be slaughtered out, and I think strategically should be in welfare reform. I think Temple Grandin is a bit different in that, like, similar to like the RSPCA or something compared to like Animals Australia or something like that, who might also do welfare stuff here and there, of like those animals being slaughtered in a slightly better way. That's not like, that's the best we can do. That's like an ideal situation for her. So I think it's different to like people who are like vegan and ideally animals wouldn't be slaughtered and kind of doing welfare in their eyes in a strategic way. Like that is the ideal scenario for her, not like the best we can get.
And to give people an example, I can't remember if it was in the movie or not, but I heard someone say that one of her ideas that got implemented was curved tracks for cows to walk in when they're going to a kill line so that they can't see what's happening in front of them. They can't see the cow in front that gets grabbed and killed and slaughtered. It happens sort of around a corner. So it's these curved, like imagine like an athletics track. It's not as big, but you know, those sort of curves where you're in a lane and there's walls either side and it curves around, and so that you can't see what's around the corner. And apparently, like, her idea is that makes the cow less stressed in that position than they otherwise would be if it's a straight ahead view of what's happening that they're walking towards.
I find that hard to believe because the cows can still hear and smell.
I agree 100%. And that was my first reaction. I was like, is this really going to make much of a difference?
But I actually found her comments really infuriating. Like, she's not vegan, and the whole conversation about, you know, pregnant sows in farrowing crates is some analogy with being stuck in an airline seat and you can't walk. And, you know, I was just like, wow. Like, no.
But
you come on the back of saying that things have improved a lot in the last 10 or 20 years. Like, you know.
But no. I guess that's what I mean. Like, I agree with you 100%, but I appreciated that. Like, that was about as honest a take I've ever heard someone in the meat industry say about what those pigs are going through, to say it's like being stuck in an economy seat in an airplane 24/7 and not being able to go anywhere. It's actually closer to, I think, what anyone's ever said in the meat industry about what they go through.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And I thought, because there's nothing nice about it. Like, most people hate that even for a couple of hours, let alone a day. Yeah. Like when you're on that for a 20-hour flight or something with a short break, and people do get up. So people that are stuck in that, I think that can make people think, wow, if I'm stuck in that sort of environment for months on end, yeah, that was... But again, I'm not trying to say that her activism or advocacy is
yeah, and necessarily worthwhile. Temple Grandin is kind of coming where she's coming from, but yeah. I guess I just found, like, the... What's his name? Humane Hancock or whatever, the Jack or whatever. Like, I'm not familiar with his YouTube and what other things he does, but I just found that whole welfare angle a bit of a distraction.
Yes.
Because he's showing, like, pigs being slaughtered. And like his dad's, I don't think we should, I don't think that's happened at my place. And it's just a way to go, oh, here's this like bad apple. And oh, that doesn't happen in this country, or that doesn't happen in my slaughterhouse or whatever. Whereas to me, it's much more into discussion. Like, I'm vegan. I don't think we should be slaughtering them at all. Let's engage with that rather than like things aren't up to standard.
Yeah.
If that's where it's actually coming from. And I guess from the viewer's lens as well, it kind of like, I find that a distracting angle of like, oh, is it like being in an economy and can I move around compared to like, why am I being putting a slice where I'm slaughtered to profit? That kind of thing.
100%. Yeah. And look, I did also think it was distracting, but I thought that perhaps Jack followed that line because his father had mentioned Temple Grandin. And so therefore I'm going to find out, what she's got to say, and this is an industry insider. Yeah, but
Well,
no to welfareism. No.
I'm not trying to advocate for welfareism.
No, of course.
But I thought that was the most interesting part of the film was that, as well as the anonymous slaughterhouse worker who was coming, like hearing from people within the industry say things that to me sound quite damning is really interesting. Even if it's not from an abolitionist perspective and it's only from a welfarist perspective, I just find it fascinating and interesting to see them on camera speaking and looking, seeing them like squirm in their seat when they get asked a question that they don't want to answer because there's no good way to answer it. Like, I just think they're incredible moments to capture. And that was the highlight of the film for me, was seeing those, like seeing, because it's almost like, and I was worried that he was going to be trying to do this to his dad, like do these sort of gotcha moments in an interview, like think about a current affairs, like you got someone in the hot seat and you ask this question on the spot and they have to squirm. And I thought if he does that to his dad, that might be quite awkward, but he didn't really. But it wasn't like he really did it to anyone in a way, but it was almost like they did these self-digging a hole by having to answer these really simple questions, but there's no easy way to answer it to sound good. They had to be honest and go, no, this is shit. And that was powerful for me. That's why I thought if someone's not vegan or not an animal advocate and they see this movie, it might just make them think.
And the question is, what does it make them think? We should be, the pig should be able to turn around, or we shouldn't be able to slaughter them all? And I get, that's why I kind of say the welfare is a bit of a distraction. But should we go to a song?
Yeah, let's do that.
So I thought we would play the songs that are in the film.
Okay. Yeah,
so
great.
The first one is by an artist called Imogen and the Knife, and it's called Red Is My Colour.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science. And scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Do you want to come and take a look inside 3CR? Curious to see our studios and where your favourite radio program is produced? On Friday the 24th and Saturday the 25th of July, 3CR is running tours as part of Melbourne Open House 2026. The 45-minute tours will take you right through the station and into the studios, as well as provide history and details of our current programming and projects. Come take a look. To register, head to openhousemelbourne.org and search for 3CR. Melbourne Open House at 3CR, Friday the 24th and Saturday the 25th of July. See you then.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species. That was Red Is My Colour by Imogen and the Knife, which is one of the songs in the film The Dying Trade, which is the topic of our conversation for today. It's myself, Trevor, Nick and Carolyn in the studio. And yeah, we're talking about this film, which is free to watch on YouTube.
Yeah. Should we talk about some of the other people that are interviewed in the film? And something that I found really difficult to listen to, but was really, really compelling, was Tom, the slaughterhouse worker, who talked about his experiences, both personally, how it impacted him, and doing that job that he said was pretty much a last resort to have to take that job, or, you know, be unemployed, and, you know, just, yeah, how much he struggled with that, how much pressure there was to meet, you know, quotas, etc. So that, yeah, essentially they were killing, you know, 140 calves an hour.
And he was skinning
and
them.
And him becoming sort of numb, yeah, and desensitized to that, and then, you know, really, I guess, leaning into, you know, drugs and alcohol to,
I guess,
self-medicate and, you know, sort of cope with that. I found that so difficult to hear and really, really heartbreaking. Yeah, I don't know if you wanted to add to that at all.
Yeah, well, I did, this was many years ago now, but I did interview an Australian slaughterhouse worker, and it was just interesting to see that overlap. There was just so much overlap of those kind of issues, drug and alcohol abuse and, like violence on the slaughterhouse floor all the time as well, and those kind of things, and just how much, everyone has unique experiences in the industry, but it's just interesting how much overlap there was in terms of how that violence inflicted to animals flows over to human violence, and also just like human mental health problems as well. Seems like very widespread.
Wow, that's really interesting to hear, because I think it's good to hear that, because the film, unfortunately, like, it doesn't say it explicitly, but it almost implies that this could be a one-off, like this slaughterhouse worker's perspective, because no one else wanted to come. Like, he said that he asked so many and no one wanted to even talk to him about it. And obviously the side of animal advocates are hoping is that that's because it is too traumatic to talk about. But the other side, you could look at that as they're thinking there's nothing to talk about. They think there's nothing wrong with it. And then he finally gets someone to speak about it. But to hear that,
And I think beyond like the individual stories too, there definitely is research which shows that like around slaughterhouses, there tends to be higher rates of violent crimes towards humans as well. So there is the more systematic evidence to support that as well.
Definitely. And, you know, I guess as an extension of that, it is not just an issue then for that particular person who is actually firsthand experiencing that trauma from working in that industry. It impacts all the people around them.
Yeah.
And sadly, I did look at some of the statistics about the animal slaughter sector. And currently, apparently, there are 100,000 people in the UK and roughly 550,000 people in the US working in those industries. So the UK and the US, so basically the focus of the film, kill nearly 11 billion animals per year. So the current food system, you know, clearly is already unsustainable. And, you know, I guess exponentially, you know, with sort of the growth that's anticipated in, you know, increased demand of for meat, that could, you know, end up being as many as sort of, a million workers working in this sort of slaughter industry, killing, you know, 19 billion animals annually. I don't know. So it's not an issue that's going away.
I was going to say, the movie mentions a specific condition called PITS, which I think is perpetrator-initiated traumatic syndrome. I think that's the right
I found that interesting.
It's
interesting to hear that one.
It's
a form of PTSD.
So it's a form of PTSD that someone who does the violence, so the person committing the violence, gets traumatized from what they've done. And obviously, you know, people might immediately struggle to think why that could be an issue or should be an issue, because it's like they're doing it, it's their choice. But it's not always as simple as it's their choice. Like in this movie, it talks about, and as Carolyn mentioned, it can be a last resort before someone's unemployed.
Yeah.
They feel like they have to do it. Like Jack's father, like he was shown the industry when he was 9 years old and basically showed that this was going to be, you know, you inherit this business as part of your family business, and this is what, you know, this is your destiny to do this. So people have lots of different paths that end up with them rationalizing why this is okay on some level. And I guess when we live in a non-vegan world, it is easier to understand how that can happen.
Yeah, and I would say, like, again, the perpetrator, again, I feel like my sort of mind goes towards, like, family violence or something like that. Like, why are we siding with the perpetrator? Mm. But I do think it is quite different because, like, unlike something like family violence, like, under capitalism, there is, like, an economic need to work and, you know, people have, you know, different levels of options depending on your privilege in society. And for those who have less options, then slaughterhouse work might be one of them. So,
I think they mentioned another area that commonly they find people with this syndrome is like people that have been in wars. And it could have even been conscription, you know what I mean? Like these people might not have had a choice. It might be their choice is go to war or go to jail, and that's their literal only choice.
Yeah. And there's like, huge sort of like overrepresentation. Let's say the US military, which is so huge, like overrepresentation of African American people, overrepresentation of lower income people, that kind of thing, which is very like similar to slaughterhouse work as well in terms of like, higher proportion of immigrant workers and that kind of thing in the US, particularly I've heard more of. But I guess like one thing that's interesting to me, just because it's something I've written about in an academic context, but also spoken about on the show over the last few years, but was that whole question of like, is it the slaughterhouse workers or is it the individuals consuming the product? Is it the like, is it the meat industry itself? Like what that
who's
was one
to blame?
That's one question I found really. What were your two thoughts on that question and how it was covered in the movie?
Well, should we explain how it was covered
in the film?
It seemed to be the biggest question left sort of hanging as a what if in the movie, I thought, was the who's to blame.
I did think they kind of did give an answer, I thought.
Of what they think.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you want me to say? I thought the answer was like it's structures. It's not individuals. Yeah. It's not so much like this. Not the workers. Like they're kind of caught up in the system. And I know they interviewed that animal activist who had become friends with a slaughterhouse worker, and she was like, "No, it's not him. Like he was a good person. It was the industry." Yeah. As much as I like my work and conversation on the show have been kind of going down that direction, I actually thought they actually went a little bit too far in that direction, I guess. So I guess
excusing
like
excusing some of the individuals involved.
Exactly. Yeah. And much. Like people have different levels, like, different other options, those kind of things. But just some of the conversations we had afterwards, with people had seen it, was it went like, yes, we should understand, and yes, we should, see we don't all have the same level of choice when it comes to the work we need to do. But perhaps they went so far in that direction that becoming a slaughterhouse worker becomes a neutral decision. Mm. It's just totally neutral. Like it's not, and I kind of see it a little bit similar to the military, for example. Mm. Like, I don't, blame a like low income, African American person who doesn't have any options. I don't I don't stigmatize them or say like they're the biggest part of the problem or anything like that. But I also don't think joining the US military is a neutral choice. I would encourage people not to do it.
Yeah.
And same with slaughterhouse workers. I know, for example, the band Green Day, for example, has had like counter recruitment stalls at their shows, for example, I think in response to military recruiters at big punk festivals and stuff like that. And I think that's a good thing. And so I think while we should look structural and why we should not demonize slaughterhouses as the main part of the problem, again, I do think it went too far, far in that direction. Like, I don't think doing slaughterhouse work is a neutral occupation.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that sounds pretty similar to our conversation before the show, Carolyn. We were talking about how this, presents this binary of like, is it the people's fault for being the consumer and driving the industry, or is it the industry's fault for providing this for the consumers to be able to consume? And this binary, either or, and we both sort of thought, well, it's a bit of both.
It is a bit of both. Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's exactly what you're saying in a roundabout way, is that you don't want to let either of them off the hook, so to speak. Like, even though one might be more to blame than the other, or it depends on your perspective and idea of social change and social blame. But I think, well, at least it sounds like the three of us are agreeing that there's blame everywhere.
I definitely think the choice to work in the industry is not neutral. I think I'm also saying this with the incredible privilege that I've never had to face that as one of the few options to, you know, sustain myself. So, you know, I do want to say that as well. But what I did think was also interesting in that conversation about, well, yeah, who is to blame? That, you know, they'd interviewed Alex Hirschhaft, a Holocaust survivor, who talks very strongly that, you know, in his experience of seeing animal body parts, that was extremely triggering for him as someone who has, you know, suffered and been in concentration camps, and, you know, that's took his whole life in a different trajectory in terms of dedicating his life to, you know, wanting to end the use of animals for food and consumption. But anyway, that his view was very strongly that it's the consumers that are
that
to
was
blame.
It's
the consumers that are blamed, that they are driving, you know, demand. And he had raised his own daughter as a vegan, who then later went on to consuming meat, which was a huge source of distress and disappointment to him. And then that was...
I can't get that. Like, I just I know it's quite a common thing of people raising, like, vegan kids and them not being vegan. And obviously, like, the parents are giving one thing, but then society and advertising and friends are, like, giving the other thing, which is to not be vegan. So I kind of get it to an extent. But just when, like, your dad's, like, veganism is tied to his, like, personal experience in the Holocaust, I just... Like, with that additional thing, I really don't get it. But anyway.
I didn't actually know that part about Alex, about his daughter at all.
No, I didn't know that.
I've heard him speak a number of times, but, yeah, I wasn't aware of that. And then, yeah, the investigator, Gail, that her view was, yes, it was very much about the industry. It's not the consumers and it's not the slaughterhouse workers, you know, it's the industry who are, you know, putting these unrealistic... you know, process times and, you know, creating all of this. And to me, that kind of leaned into the welfareism as well. So, you know, I sort of thought, it would have been great to sort of steer this a different way. But perhaps the filmmaker wanted to just get their honest perspective.
Should we take a quick song break?
We should.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the second music piece that's in the film, and this is by Amy Mann. And this was actually a song that originally came out on the Magnolia soundtrack back in 99. This is called Save Me.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. Find out more about our community lunches and programs. Check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species on 3CR Radio. Sunday afternoon, almost 2 o'clock, which is when we have to wrap up. But that last song was Save Me by Amy Mann, which is featured in the film The Dying Trade, which is what we're talking about today, which is a documentary about, I guess, perspectives of vegans and slaughterhouse workers, and especially when they are in families with each other, I guess, is the crux of the movie.
Yeah, yeah. So something I thought we could consider is, you know, do we think that humanising the slaughterhouse worker obscures the sort of core abolitionist message that animals are rights-bearing individuals and not property?
Yes, yeah, so I think it's clear that it does obscure it, but because I guess that was Nick's point earlier in that, you know, it's a bit too welfare-focused and not abolitionist-focused, but my side little comment on that would be it's not necessarily a bad thing to obscure it at times. I think sometimes we can have a few different focuses and maybe this film's focus didn't need to be on that, but Yeah,
I think the focus was so much on understanding the human that the animal can be left out. Again, if we do view slaughterhouse work as a neutral choice that we just totally understand and kind of accept, and I guess the way I see it on the individual level is that if I, you know, knew someone through friends or family or whatever who's a slaughterhouse worker, I wouldn't assume that that person is the worst in the world or anything like that. And again, I did the slaughterhouse worker interview. I did hang out with a bit. And, that was like an ex-slaughterhouse worker at that point as well. But, yeah, I think like not like demonizing them and thinking they're horrible and that, you know, they just their whole lives they really want to harm animals. Again, there can be limited circumstances. But at the same time, like if I knew someone who was like, I'm considering option A and option B in slaughterhouse work, I would say don't do the slaughterhouse one. Like if I was asked about it, like one for animals, but also for themselves as well. Yeah. I wouldn't just be like, I totally understand. Like whatever you want to do is fine. Like both those choices are valid. Like I think, again, I still think that we should view slaughterhouse work as a negative, like a net negative societally, particularly if we include animals within society, but it's a like it's a negative in like it's
at
like
the personal level as well.
Well, but it's kind of like it can be like more or less excused depending on your other options. Like you can be doing a negative thing, but based on understandable circumstances, but that doesn't make it a neutral or acceptable thing. I think. I think that is the sort of.
My take on what the documentary was showing was less about trying to excuse the choice, so to speak, but more to understand the choice. Like I thought it was about, it didn't seem to me like it was trying to say either, you know, this is a bad choice and someone's a bad person for doing this. And it wasn't also the other way I didn't see of this being a totally neutral act. Like it's fine to do that. You know, it's if that's what you want to do, you do it. I thought the film was really highlighting that people who are in this for whatever reason, and that there are reasons where it can be hard to avoid, there's huge negative effects that flow on a personal level, on a family level, on a societal level, and obviously to animals. And I thought it was just highlighting all of the negatives of this job, but also showing, I guess, why people aren't doing it for those reasons. They're doing it, you know, they get caught up in this industry and I don't think anyone, it reminded me a bit of like, and I know obviously this isn't a negative sort of job, but driving trains, you know, people who drive trains often unfortunately see people die from suicide. It's part of the job and it's in their training and it can be very traumatic for them. But you don't really talk about that or think about it very much. And I think that this is like another, like when people go, obviously they're going to a slaughterhouse, they know it's going to be violent and everything, but I don't think people realize like if people saw an interview like that Nick did with the ex-slaughterhouse worker or the interview that's in this film before they signed up for the job, they might think twice about signing up for that job when they saw the impact and how people have traumatic stress disorders and people, how it affects their life in a really deeply way. It's not just as simple as, oh, this is a job and then I go home and everything's fine again. That was what I took from it.
Yeah, and I think it was really a focus on a personal family situation as well, rather than, I guess, maybe, you know, a systemic critique of capitalism and speciesism and, you know, all the things that I probably would like to see, you know, more from a total liberation perspective. But look, overall, I think it was a pretty powerful film. I do think it's worth, you know, having a look at. I don't know if there's other things that you'd want to mention in these.
Yeah, yeah. I guess like I would view it as like it made sense to kind of accept that. Like depends how we view it, acceptance in terms of like I accept that I can't change what my dad's doing. But again, it kind of came to accept it like it was kind of fine that my dad's a slaughterhouse worker. And I don't think I would be like, I accept my dad does this thing which is harmful and I don't like it, but I'm going to accept it and not try and change it. Yeah. But like, and my dad is great in other ways, except my dad is not a slaughterhouse worker, but I'm just saying hypothetically, like my dad is great in all these other ways, but like still maintaining that this is like a negative thing to do. But yeah, overall, I definitely recommend the documentary and I thought it did raise lots of really interesting questions. And again, these questions of sort of, yeah, treatment of animals, whether we should be slaughtering them at all, but also these big questions of like who is to blame individuals and those kind of things. So I think it's, definitely recommend it. And again, the personal, the linking the personal to these big issues, I think was a really nice style as well. Mm. So yeah, I definitely recommend it, even though I had a few little qualms with it.
That's so interesting that both of you thought that it was like the end result was sort of like excusing the dad for his profession.
That's what I got.
I kind of did. And I will just say, in the closing of the film, you know, Jackie's writing that letter to his father and he says, "You and I have been born into a world where it's acceptable to bring billions of animals into existence only to live lives full of pain. I don't know how to help them and it's breaking my heart. I don't blame you. I never did. I just wanted you to see what I see and feel." So from that, I did sort of feel that,
like, as long as you understand kind of why I'm vegan, then it's fine for you to be slaughtering animals.
Yeah, I know. And I did find that.
I didn't take that from it, but that's so interesting.
What did you take from
that.
It?
I just thought, I don't blame you, as in
you individually.
There were fact, like, you know, going into the industry at 9 years old, like having to, having your parents put that pressure on you. Like, I thought it was him saying, I can understand why you've ended up in this profession. And I don't think you're a bad person because that's how things panned out, because I can see that you're a good person in other ways. And I'm not going to just let this part of your life sort of demonize you as a person because of our opposing views on animals. That was what I took from it. Was it was more just an acceptance.
I like the nuance.
And I think you can do you're not a bad person, but I guess that what we're debating is whether he's sort of saying, but you're still doing a bad thing.
I feel like Jack would want him to quit. I feel like Jack would definitely want him to quit. Still, it wouldn't he'd be like, oh yeah, it's fine for you to stay in. I wanted to just hijack the end here because song.
Go for it.
There's a quote that you might remember because it shows up in the film a few times. It's from To Kill a Mockingbird, the novel by Nell Harper Lee. And it's when Atticus tells Scout, "You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view, until you climb inside of his skin and walk around in it." And that came up at two points in the documentary. They put that on the screen. I thought it was an interesting choice, especially because so much of the film focused on skinning animals, and then to have this quote mentioning about climbing inside the skin and walking around it, I thought that was, it's not what it was meant to do, but I just thought it was
interesting. But it was a little jarring.
Yeah, a bit jarring of that. But I guess that quote also makes me think that the point of the film was more about having shared understandings of why people end up in certain situations or why they make certain decisions, not to excuse those decisions, but just to understand them. Maybe I'm looking at it a bit too much through rose-colored glasses. Who knows? Because that was interesting about...
This is why these things are good to discuss.
So the last song is not in the film. It's actually a sort of industrial hard rock metal track from a band called Circle of Dust from LA. And they were around in the same sort of time as Ministry, Skinny Puppy, Nine Inch Nails, Depeche Mode, that sort of era. And they have this song called Dissolved, which actually starts with that quote taken from, I think, a sample from the film To Kill a Mockingbird. So I thought it might be apt to close the show with that.
Fantastic.
But thanks for the show, Carolyn.
Thanks very much. And stick around for rotations.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.